Vietnamese-American poet Ocean Vuong won both the T.S. Eliot Prize and the Whiting Award for his collection Night Sky with Exit Wounds. He's followed up his success in verse with a novel. On Earth, Briefly We're Gorgeous tells the story of Vietnamese immigrant Little Dog and his family's struggles living in Hartford, Connecticut in the 1990s and early noughties. We encounter Tiger Woods, Vietnamese folktales and tobacco farming along the way. And Ocean Vuong joins me now from London. Ocean, you said after the amazing success of your poetry collection that when people were saying, right, when's the second one coming along? You said there's nothing left. So something must have changed or we wouldn't have got On Earth Were Briefly Gorgeous. What changed?
Yes, there was this capitalistic anxiety to produce a second volume of poems. And my friend said, well, you already wrote about war and displacement and American violence. You must write about something completely different now. And I didn't want to. I felt that displacement is our species-wide concern. And I wanted to take these questions into different terrain, into another form, to see if I would discover anything new. And the novel was the potent form for that project.
And when we talk about the novel and we talk about the character whose trials and tribulations we're following here, Little Dog, who writes this letter, the novel is essentially a letter from Little Dog to his mother. Mm-hmm. How much of Little Dog is actually Ocean Vuong, or is he a totally fictional character?
It's a little bit of both. I wanted to invite the autobiographical reading, but ultimately refuse it as a way to preserve my agency as an artist.
So Little Dog finds himself coming to the United States, a very different type of immigrant experience, or at least reason for coming to the United States in the first place than many of the stories we're currently hearing. What were his and indeed your reasons for having to for moving to the United States back in the 1990s when you were just two?
Yes, Little Dog's mother was mixed raced, and I think that's part of the ostracization that she experienced, and they would ship them off back to America. You're the product of war. You're the children of a trader, of a Vietnamese woman who eloped with an American soldier, producing a mixed-race child. And I wanted to investigate that gray liminal space as a site of possibility, not a site of tragedy, that to be of myriad origins is a moment of power, particularly for this family in America.
And Little Dog's mother and Little Dog's grandmother, Lan, are very much part of this story. To what extent, and here you are as, if you like, almost the grandmother really at the epicenter of the Vietnam War. She would have been a young woman at the time.
Yeah.
Here you are now writing about that war, you know, more than a quarter of a century, nearly half a century further on. Do you think it's only your generation that actually can start to explore the fallout from the Vietnam War?
Absolutely. And I think if we think about our ancestors and our elders, regardless of who we are and where we live, it's the folks who survived it. It's very difficult to ask them to tell the story. And I think part of my generation telling the story is also betraying our elders. We betray them in order to preserve them. It's not necessarily a reconcilable paradox. You know, they survived and they want to shield and protect us. They don't want to talk about it. It's too painful. But in order for us to know who we are, to know where we've come from, we have to ask these questions.
What about in your own home? How difficult was it to even broach that subject with either your mother or your grandmother, in fact, you know, to get them to tell you or to talk about, to tell you stories of the war?
It was a great trepidation to breach the subject. But the Vietnamese household is always running around the kitchen. It's a body that interrogates itself using service. And so my way of doing it was to help my mother snap the peas, help her, you know, make the rice, wash the lettuce, and through service, without confronting each other, without looking at each other, we can actually tell stories, both of us facing the window, looking into the past, and we're able to avoid each other and yet still understand each other using language, this ancient sacred tool that we have, which is today often misused. And I think there's ways to do it, and language was the bridge.
And how important is the storytelling aspect, the use of language for storytelling specifically? I'm thinking of the fact that in the book, Little Dog, for example, the way he gets, well, maybe one of the ways that grandmother Lan starts to open up and speak to him is when he takes, as she refers to, the snow or the grey hair. Yeah. He plucks the grey hairs out of her head, and then she will, off she'll go into a set of tales. Have you had that experience? What type of tales did you hear?
Yes, all sorts of tales. You know, I think we think of the immigrant and the refugee, those who survive war, as having nothing. The myth is that they only have the shirts on their backs. But in fact, they are rich with wisdom and knowledge. And that knowledge recasts into mythology and storytelling gives them power. That these women, exiled through violence, are actually powerful. And that is the inheritance that Little Dog receives. And I think it's akin to every culture has a strong root of storytelling. John Berger was a big proponent of it, Seamus Heaney as well. And I think for these Vietnamese women, it's no different. The story was the place where they can change who they were. They can rewrite the past and cast new light on themselves for their young ones.
Yeah, they can rewrite the past, but in fact what they have to do in the case of these two women is they have to retell the past, because neither of them, in fact, can read or write. How significant is the fact that the third generation Little Dog, or the third generation Ocean Vuong, speaking to me today, he has the literacy that neither his mother nor grandmother had?
Very important, because I get to make an artifact. The book is an artifact. The book is an object. I get to leave something behind. I get to make this fossil, this thumbprint of the mind called the printed word, where I said, this is who we are. This is where we came from. This is what happened to us. And for them, their only page was the air. And I think I'm always collaborating with them, collaborating with my elders. And I think that's part of the beauty of our species. Every body, every human being made with flesh and bone is also a library.
The language that you use is vital to this as well. And by that, I'm simply referring to the fact that you're writing in English. There was, you speak, Roland Barthes features quite a lot in mm-hmm. the novel. Little Child is reading him, and I presume Ocean Vuong read him quite mm-hmm. a bit as well. Yeah. And specifically, the work that's mentioned is The Morning Diary, which he wrote following his own mother's death. But what you talk about, quoting Barthes, is this idea that two languages, your mother, your grandmother speaking Vietnamese, you speaking English, they cancel each other out. And a third language is beckoned, I think is the word that Barthes actually used. What language came to you? What was it?
The body. And I think body and service is another kind of language. And also the tones in between the words. So much of that is articulated, the pause, the hesitations, the grunts, the exhausted body of a nail bar worker after a 12-hour shift, the sounds it makes, the way it collapses face down at times as soon as they come home. And I think being a child in that household, you have to learn how to read the body. You have to learn how to read the movements and the silences of your elders in order to navigate and ultimately to care for them.
Was there a nail bar in your young life? And if there was, when you were there, were you listening to stories, or in fact were you, as much as anything else, watching the physicality of what was going on?
All of it. I think being a child of nail bar workers, I was, unbeknownst to me, training all my life to be a writer. When you look at the way nail bar workers work, they use language and care and vigilance. Every piece of microscopic dirt is filed out. The words they use to garner rapport with the customer so that they can have a tip at the end of it. It's a masterclass of craft and rhetoric. And I got to observe that. I got to see that the workshop of beauty was also a workshop for life.
Physicality, the body, and sexuality become very important later on in the book as we move into the central section and the arrival of a character called Trevor, a young American boy very strong sexual and physical relationship between Trevor and little dog. How important is the physicality? And you describe it in very great detail. There are no holes barred in that particular description. How important was it to get that kind of corporeality, that viscerality into the description?
It was important. And it was also important for me to have it return again and again. Often in novels, sex is a plot point. We do it, we get it over with, and then we go on to the next thing, perhaps marriage. But for queer bodies, you know, so much of sex involves failure. We're never told the birds and the bees. We never get that talk from our families and our fathers and mothers, if they even want us in the house after they find out who we are. And so much of queer knowledge is through failure. And I didn't want to see the failure as a dead, static moment. I wanted to show it for what it is, which is a praxis for forwarding. We fail forward. And perhaps one way to look at sex for queer folks is that failure is the first stage of innovation. And these boys, they innovate themselves towards pleasure when there was no map for them before on how to get there.
When little dog decides that he's going to tell his mother that he's gay, I'm very interested around the language that he's lacking to actually tell her this, a language that he can, how he can communicate this to her. Maybe you'd explain, is that an absence of any word at all for homosexuality or for gayness in Vietnamese, is that right?
Yes, we never had it. You know, it was not until the French colonialists came with their Catholicism that they started to use the word bédé, which is short for pederast, and it immediately criminalized the act. But before that, queer bodies were seen as sites of power, moments of clairvoyance. We saw the future. We were mysterious in the best ways, not the dangerous ways that were recast once the French came in.
And that suggests in some ways, you know, rather than a denial, a type of inclusion of queerness or gayness in Vietnamese culture. Was that the case in the Vietnam, not that you grew up in, but that you were born into?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. We had different words for it, like I said, but they were words that cast power. You know, we called them magicians. We called them sorcerers.
One further thing I did want to ask you, Ocean, actually, is obviously this is a book addressed, a letter addressed from a son to a mother. Your mother's own reaction to the book, I think she kind of said, well, she can't read it, so I don't know how interested she has or what interest she has shown in it to you. But also I read that she very unfortunately has been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer in recent times. What has her reaction been to the book, first of all, and what is her state of health?
She's responding to the treatment. You know, stage 4 is stage 4. It's the last stage, but right now she's on her feet and she's healing from it, and the diagnosis has actually improved now that she's getting medicine for it, and so she's happy. She's very proud. You know, she loves going to my readings. And because she can't read and understand it, she actually sits adjacent to me looking at the audience. I said, "Ma, why are you looking at them?" You know, she said, "Well, I want to see what your words do to their faces." So that's her spectacle.
What a beautiful reaction that is. Ocean Vuong there speaking to me about his debut novel, Unearthed Were Briefly Gorgeous, published by Jonathan Cape.